atmosphere, teaching truths that will last a lifetime.
Come out of the world, oh my people, seek the truth.
Welcome to Torah Life Ministries, teaching about the instruction of our Creator and putting His Word into action. From suffering well to living a blessed life, looking forward to the hope and future that awaits true believers of the faith. Welcome to the show and your host, Paul Neeson.
Hello everybody, this is Paul with Torah Life Ministries, and we continue to do our Suffer Well devotional series, and we're up to the 259th devotion of this series, and we're going to be looking at the bulls of Bashan. In other words, or what I call our thoughts and our mind, the mind of Messiah, the mind we must have to persevere. So let's read. It says, we start off with a scripture in Psalms 22, verses 12 and 13. It says, many bulls have surrounded me. Bulls of Bashan have compassed and beset me. They grape at me with their mouth and roaring lions. That was Psalms 22, verses 12 and 13. And we read, it says, it's time to cross over, loved one. It's time to seek the deeper implications of the word. Consider this. Is the bigger picture here that there were bulls staring at David? Was David's true concern a bunch of animals? Was he closed in and surrounded by roaring bulls? Was that his real dilemma? Let us challenge you to be transformed. You do have the mind of Messiah. 1 Corinthians 2:16. You do have the mind of Messiah. This new mind of yours will help you build a foundation that allows for much greater understanding. This greater understanding involves the mystical aspect of Scripture. In a sense, the more supernatural meaning, it will provide an appreciation for the underlying deep and secret truths that Yahweh intends for you to know. However, it is the glory of the Almighty to counsel a matter, but the glory of kings to search out a matter. Proverbs 25:2. The search for the deeper things will aid in the transforming of your mind. Romans 12:2. But be not mistaken, it takes an effort on your part. It is the glory of kings to search out a matter. You are a royal priest, are you not? However, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age, nor of the rulers of this age, who are coming to nothing. But we speak the wisdom of the Almighty in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which the Almighty ordained before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew. For had they knew, they would not have crucified the Messiah of glory, the Master of glory. But as it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man, the things which the Almighty has prepared for those who love Him. But Yahweh has revealed them to us through His Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of the Almighty. 1 Corinthians 2, verses 6 to 10. Now let's look at Psalms 22, verses 12 to 13 again, but this time with a more spiritual vision, more spiritual eyes, so that we might search out deep things of the Almighty. It starts off by saying many, and in parentheses, multiplying. Many bulls, and in parentheses, bulls means divided, stubborn thoughts have surrounded me, in parentheses, invaded my thought process. Bulls of Bashan, in parentheses, material consciousness not yet redeemed to spiritual consciousness, have compassed, in parentheses, continually revolving thoughts, and beset me, and in parentheses, entangled me. They, and then we go into parentheses again, broken consciousness, divided carnal thought processes, gape at me, and in parentheses, speak into my consciousness. With their mouths, and in parentheses, scattering ideas, as raving, and in parentheses, pulling and plucking as thoughts, and roaring, in parentheses, roaming and moaning within, lions, in parentheses, roaring thoughts that obstruct calm thinking. Here is a flowing paraphrase. A growing number of dispersed and stubborn thoughts have invaded my thinking process. These are thoughts that enslave me to an unredeemed material consciousness as opposed to the freedom of spiritual thinking. These fleshly thoughts continually revolve in my mind and keep me entangled. These carnal thought processes create the scattered and fragmented ideas. They pull and pluck at my brain, and they cause a rumbling and mourning within. They roar so loudly that I cannot even think straight. It's all about the mind, the thought process, how we think about ourselves, how we redeem those thoughts by the power of the spirit. It's all in the mind, loved one. Life is in the mind. And I say often that people, if you have trouble falling asleep because your mind is entangled with the worries of this world, if you're so confused and upset and you have all these negative emotions going to the world, not only are you not going to be at peace, but there's something even more detrimental that you're revealing and allowing the enemy to take over your life because you're not showing that joy and that peace that you have in Yahweh. So we must not let that happen. We must stay positive in our thinking. We must continue to seek the mind of Messiah to be one with him in body, in spirit, and in the mind, to think like he thinks, to love what he loves and hate what he hates. And he knows our thoughts are every thought. It says in Psalms 41:11, Yahweh knows the people's thoughts. He knows their thoughts. Yahweh knows our thinking. And we got to look at this for a second. What does the Bible say about us knowing thinkings of other people? Can we know what somebody else is thinking? Now, technology is trying to make this happen today. Technology is trying to make it so we can just think something without even verbally speaking it, and somebody would know our thoughts. As of yet, that's not happening. Only Yahweh can know our thoughts. But let's see what it says actually shows us in the Bible and the scriptures about this. Genesis 6 verse 5 says, Yahweh saw the wickedness of man was great on earth, and that every intent of thoughts of his heart was evil continually. So knowing that Yahweh knows our thoughts, and we have yet to transform to what the devotional said in getting our mind in a different place than the worldly, fleshly place, that should be very scary, knowing that Yahweh knows what we're thinking. You know, we need to understand this. It says in 1 Chronicles 28:9, it says, when David told his son Solomon, Yahweh searches all hearts and understands every intent of the thoughts. Wow. Psalms 94:11 says, Yahweh knows the thoughts of man. Yahweh knows the thoughts of man. And Yeshua knew the thoughts of the scribes in Matthew 9:4. If we know that, we remember that. But we cannot know the thoughts of any other yet. It's not happened. The technology is not there yet, but more important, Yahweh didn't create us that way to know each other's thoughts. 1 Corinthians 2 verse 11 says, for who among men knows the thoughts of man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Yahweh did not create humans to be able to communicate simply through thought. He gave us communication, and he gave us a way to talk to each other, and so on. You know, there are those that have certain connections with people where they literally do know what a person's going to say before they say it. For example, like a mother and their children. You know, there's just this connection. They know them so well. And even Job. We look at Job and his friends, how he knew them so well. It wasn't this special power to know that, see in their head and know their thoughts, but when you know somebody so well, you know their thoughts. In Job 21:27, he tells of one of the comforters, "Behold, I know your thoughts," to one of those friends, "and the plans by which you would wrong me." How did he know? Because he knew him so well. He didn't have this special gift that Yahweh had, literally reading people's minds, but you get to know someone so well. It's another story. You know, so you think about that. Think about that. When you know someone so well, it's almost as if you know their thoughts. And here's something very interesting for you all to grasp. And this is why this teaching is important. Yahweh and only Yahweh can literally, if you want to say, read our minds or know our thoughts before we even think them. Before we even think them, he knows them. Not only when we're thinking them. We want to know him and his thoughts. We need to get to know him very well and strike up a relationship with him through prayer and spending time with him. That's how you get to know people. People that are married for 50, 60 years, brothers and sisters that grow up together, they know what someone's going to say before they say it because they know that person so well. We need to know Yahweh that well. But here's a real big important question is, can Satan know our thoughts? Can he know our thoughts? And the great thing is to know that he can only know us through our actions and our words, but not through our thoughts. This is why we must stay positive and enthusiastic for Yahweh's word at all times, even if we don't understand or even if we're confused. This is why we must suffer well, because Satan's always watching us. Watching. And if we're continually thinking negative, if we're continually not trusting Yahweh, if we're continually living in fear, Satan knows exactly what we're fearing. He knows exactly how we're going to respond. And that's an open door to him, and we do not want to let that happen. We must not let him see our actions. We must have a positive mind and positive thinking consistently in every situation in our life. And we have to understand that. The enemy cannot see our thoughts. But he sees our actions. So we have to know each other so well, so well, so well. And as we do know each other so well, we have to let the enemy not know what we're thinking. And we have to train ourselves not even to think anything that would open up a door to the enemy to begin with. We have to train ourselves to get there and to do that. Now, before Yeshua came in your life, we had a certain mind. After Yeshua comes in our life, some things are supposed to change. Number one, your heart. You're no longer to love what you used to love. When you get that circumcised heart, you're going to love what he loves and hate what he hates. And our minds. Everything stems from our minds. Everything starts in the mind. You know, as a face reflects in the water, so the man's actions reflects who that person really is, and it starts in the mind. What's this person thinking? Yeshua went over and beyond that. It's not the sin, even to think of sinning is an issue. You know, the mind, we must protect it. We must keep it pure. It says, there's scriptures that talk about this. It says in Romans 8, 6 and 7, "For the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the spirit is life and peace. Because the mind set on the flesh is hostile towards Yahweh. For it does not subject itself to the law of Yahweh. For it is not even able to do so." Romans 1:28 says, "And just as they did not see it fit to acknowledge Yahweh any longer, Yahweh gave them over to depraved mind to do the things which are not proper. Remember, Romans 8:7, "Because the mind is set on the flesh is hostile towards Yahweh. It does not subject itself to the law of Yahweh."
Come out of the world. You've been listening to the Torah Life Ministries with your host, Paul Neeson. If you would like to learn more, please visit TorahLifeMinistries.org or call 917-407-2270. This program is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To donate, visit the website at TorahLifeMinistries.org or send your gift to P.O. Box 5503, Lake Worth, Florida, 33466. Thank you for your prayers and support. Torah Life Ministry.
South Florida's good news station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Red Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
I've a lot of the heroes in the faith. When I first got saved and converted, I didn't know any Bible, and so I would watch them on TV and listen to them on radio. I'm not a big fan of some of my former heroes because yes. I'm trying to be polite. We're on radio. Because they did what you just stated. It looks like they're taking too big of a bite out of the apple. They're hoarding the apples. They've let some of that stuff go to their head.
In town here, I went up to the fanciest hotel on the beach, And there's a, I'm talking to the men. What do you call the men that park your car? Valets.
Yeah.
And I said, who owns that new black Rolls Royce? And they said, a preacher. Look over there. There's a white one. That's owned by his wife. That's over $1 million worth of cars. I'm sorry, but I believe if you're called to preach, I mean, you can drive a nice car, but shouldn't you live a more ascetic lifestyle? I'm just not sure that's, you know what I mean?
Well,
that's me becoming judged.
I'm not going to put a limit on what God can give a preacher, but it's been my understanding, like I just stated and you alluded to, that they're taking a little too much, they're keeping a little too much, and they've actually forgotten where they came from. You know, so, and I'm not here to judge, and I don't know what God is doing in their life.
Well, it's the same thing in real life. Now, as an older guy, I can run into somebody. I love people, but I ran into a rich guy, young guy, and we're talking, doing business, whatever, but I could tell it was only going to go to a certain point, and he was blocking. I don't need Red as a friend. I've got my money in my bank account. I'm a billionaire. I'm a multimillionaire. He's robbed of that relationship.
Yep.
Whereas if I ran to a poor man on the street and say, hi, how are you? What's your name? My name's Albert. Hi, Albert. I'm Rhett. We have equal dignity for each other. Now we can talk and become friends, but we have a need for each other. But if it cuts off your think you're too somehow secure to need others, right?
I've been doing this, I don't know, 30 years or more. If you go back and look at Charles Stanley, 10 years, 20 years ago.
Listen to me.
He looks except for a few wrinkles, he looks exactly the same.
You know he passed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No fancy...
No.
Multicolored jackets and the super hairdo and the dying and the...
Dr. Graham, who I got to interview, Dr. Billy Graham, when he came up, it was in a Balboa hotel where they came in where they're doing the laundering. He drove in the front of a normal car. They said he would not sit in the back and that he would not get into a limousine because he had humility.
And so...
you're saying the same thing about Dr. Stanley.
Yeah. And so getting back... to the topic recovery. I think we all need to recover from either, like Solomon said, a little too much or not enough. I come from very humble beginnings, and it's very difficult for me to step into higher things because of the way my mind has been acclimated. It's hard for me. I don't ever want to see the day when I buy some $800 tennis shoes. I hope that day never comes. Now, I've been known to wear cowboy hats. A Stetson, $250. But I don't ever want to see the day that the hat that I'm wearing costs $500, $600, $700. I don't want to see that day.
How about those new Bugatti cars? I come out of a restaurant down in Palm Beach. That's a $3 million car.
I was going to say, a million won't even get one.
I could retire on that.
They got a Mercedes that's going for a mil now.
Oh, yeah.
But I can think of better things to do with my money because I come from humble beginnings. I don't know. Now, the Lord has forced me to step into bigger shoes as I go along.
Okay, but I could be arrogant in this way. I was living, as I told you, I was a struggling songwriter living in the ghetto of Troy, New York. $150 a month rent. Jesus comes and visits me there. I get born again. Now, I come down to Florida, and I have prospered. I know what it's like to have a prestige vehicle. I know what it's like to have a big home on the water. So, and I know what it's like to stay in nice places. So do I have really a right to tell others they shouldn't, you know, because I've had it, even though if I don't have it now... I have had it, because once you've had it, you know, you go like, well, like I walked into a billionaire's house, and we walked out, and I said, I didn't feel comfortable in there. And my wife says, well, just because you have money doesn't mean it doesn't buy you good taste. And I'd rather be in a small home where there's love than in a big home with big empty, you know, caverns where there maybe is not.
Because well, one thing I know about my God is he wants us to rub elbows and help and witness to the affluent as well as the destitute.
Yes.
Because I've, in my time, I've worked for a lot of affluent people, and some of them are not happy, and some of them are not saved. But unless I'm given access to them, you know, and also it's been a learning lesson for me. I had a millionaire client of mine out in Vegas. I had the code to the front gate, I would go over there twice a week. And so it was very different for me to be trusted by that level of individual. So it did me some good, you know. But anyway.
Well, Bob Dylan said in one of his songs, "Help me, I'm helpless like a rich man's son." A terrifying thing to inherit money because it robs you of the desire to try to climb your own mountain. You're kind of like it usurps that, you know? All of a sudden, you don't have to try.
I think I saw an interview with Ed Bradley where he said he sold his soul.
No.
Or was that someone else?
Well, no, people misconstrue. Bob Dylan didn't sell his soul. Okay. He knows Jesus. But he meant he made a deal with God
early
on. I made a deal with the man. He called him the man. But Jesus, he had gospel albums out before I come to know the Lord.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. And I talked with people who have, and you know, there have been people that went to Bible study with him and everything, yeah. You know, he's Jewish, and he now has a line of whiskey. But see, that's not for me to judge what he's going through.
Yeah, and going back on topic, I am persuaded, given my 58 years of living, that we all are recovering from something. Too much, not enough.
Yeah. Wounded when we're children.
Whenever I do an altar call, one of the altar calls is for the person who never stepped up.
What do you mean? Jesus, you mean?
Yeah, they're still sitting in the pews.
Yeah, yeah.
They haven't taken on any ministry.
Yeah.
I preach that we have a ministry in the local church, and then we have a personal ministry.
Everybody has the ministry of reconciliation, right?
Yes. And it could be cooking pies. It could be the guys standing on the street corner with the bullhorn. People standing out in front of
abortion clinics. Do you know Brother Joseph?
He's
the guy that does that here in town.
No,
he's a black man with big hair like this and big beard. He had 90 employees. God said, "You're to go out." He has a wife and five beautiful children. He's been right in here. He's on the street corner. He's got his megaphone. But God has called him to the foolishness of preaching.
And so each one of us has a ministry. And again, I believe it's
whatever it is.
Maybe you're the usher at your church, but you feed the homeless down in the community. So we've got a job to do in the house and out of the house. And I believe that's where our strength and our growing is going to come from. But I believe that everybody should be recovering from something. Either we're recovering from the highs or we're recovering from the lows. I was in a relationship with this young lady who said that she was never allowed to go to church.
She was never allowed? Why?
Because her family didn't want her to go to church. That whenever she went, she was beaten. And she would go anyway. So we're all recovering either from the highs or from the lows. Because there's people that don't want other people to get it. And I've actually had people to come to me and dissuade me from the Christian faith. I've had people in my family. And again, going back to an earlier statement you made, I have a family member who had a family member die, and they've never been the same. When that person died, it took something out of them.
Well, I'm one of those. I've been devastated by the grief, but I've had to learn that Jesus learned obedience by the things which he suffered, and it is a man he was well acquainted with sorrow.
Jeremiah.
So not enough people are preaching about the sorrow. Everything's hungry. You know, you go into a church and everybody's got a prophetic word that's positive, positive, positive. And I had one preacher turn to and said, "What about the negative?" And I thought, wow, I never thought of that. And so I'm working on a book right now, We Only Grow in the Valleys. When we're fat and happy.
That's good.
When we're fat and happy, we're not going to grow.
For me, and I can only speak for me, my two greatest areas of growth, I would have to say, would be in the lull or the valley. I don't learn in the good times. When I got a pocket full of money, a whole bunch of friends, everything, I don't learn nothing. But when things get taken away from me, or when I don't have something pulling, because I'm motion activated. I like to move. I'm pressure operated. I like to move. I like to shake. I like to turn. I like to twist. But if there's no movement, I'm like a machine that's not turned on. I don't see, I don't have any worth or value.
I'm 70. I do not believe in retirement.
Is a fan really a fan if you don't turn it on?
Yeah.
Is a radio if you don't turn it on?